The Irish Civil War officially began on the 28th of June 1922 when the National Army attacked the anti-treaty force occupying the Four Courts in Dublin. It officially ended on the 24th of May 1923 with Frank Aiken's Dump Arms Order to IRA volunteers. So overall, an 11-month conflict. The Irish Civil War Fatalities Project is the first systematic attempt to investigate the number of people killed between those two dates. This is a University College Cork project in collaboration with RTE and supported with funding from the government's Decade of Centenaries programme. The findings are available online now. There's a series of articles at rte.ie/history with regional studies on the data uncovered. There's also an interactive map on the UCC website, which allows you to take a county-by-county look at who died, where they died and how they died. To talk about this, from our Cork studio, I'm joined by Dr. Andy Bielenberg of UCC, and with me here in Dublin is historian John Dorney of theirishstory.com. Over the past year and a half, they've been collecting all this information and using it to assess the geography and chronology of Civil War casualties and examine the social profile of the victims. John, you've been looking at this question of Civil War casualties for a lot longer than 18 months. I think it's a decade at this point. Perhaps now with this project, you're close to a final determination on the numbers. Could you start by breaking those numbers down for us? How many deaths were there? How many on each side of the conflict? And how many civilians were killed?
Sure, Miles. So the total figure we have for the official dates of the Civil War, so not including the before and after, and not including, you know, the first 6 months of 1922, which is very bloody in the north, but referring only to the Southern Civil War, the number we have is 1,420 odd, of whom the largest number are National Army or pro-treaty personnel, about 650 of them. There are about 440 anti-treaty deaths, mostly IRA, of course, and in the 26 counties, about 340 civilians, with about 30 or 40 more in the north.
And this is not, because we're talking about an 11-month period, it's not entirely out of line with, say, War of Independence casualties, is it?
No, it's not entirely out of line. There's some notable differences, though, Miles. So we have the Dead of the Irish Revolution project, which has a figure for War of Independence deaths, and they are higher. So there's about 2,000, 1919 to 21, up to the truce. Now, they're more evenly spread over the 32 counties, is one thing. The other thing that's very different about the Civil War is that there are an awful lot more civilians killed in the War of Independence. So that might surprise some people, but there are about three times more civilians killed in the War of Independence than in the Civil War. One reason for that is the North is not necessarily violent during the Southern Civil War, where a disproportionate amount, about 80% of people killed north of the border are civilians. But another reason, probably more important for our purposes, is that the combatant sides in the Civil War don't really target civilians systematically, whereas they do prior to the truce. Like the IRA, for example, kills about 200 people as informers. British reprisals often include killing civilians who they think, rightly or wrongly, are affiliated with the Republican movement. So that's one perhaps surprising thing about the Civil War, is that civilians are to a large extent left out or not targeted.
Hmm. Andy, let's talk about the civilian dead of the Civil War, perhaps one of the more overlooked aspects of the conflict in the past. Broadly speaking, did these civilians die mostly by accident? How did they die? Why did they die?
Well, what was interesting was that we found that about 40% were deliberately targeted, this 40% that we could discern. So quite a lot were deliberately targeted. But 27% were killed in crossfire and over 20% in accidents. So some might call that collateral killings.
So 40% were actually targeted. That seems like quite a high figure. Who was being targeted? Were they being targeted by the National Army? Were they being targeted by anti-treaty Republicans? And who were the victims?
They were targeted more by the National Army, people who didn't stop in roadblocks and stuff like that. In among Republicans, killings in raids, there were a few civilians who got killed that way. One of the big distinctions with the War of Independence was the number of spies killed. In the War of Independence, you're looking at about 191 spies have been documented as being killed, suspected spies, I should say. in the Civil War, it's far, far lower. We've got a number of about 13 or 14. And this is one of the factors which explains why civilian deaths are far lower.
But would people who were not necessarily identified as spies, but were identified as collaborators with the National Army, for example, were they being targeted by the Republicans?
To some extent, yes, there were cases like that of people who worked, civilians who worked for the National Army, in some cases, were killed.
And what about the age range? Because I'm assuming that National Army, Republican forces, the age range would have been kind of late teens, early 20s to late 30s. But I presume that the age range of the civilians that were dying would have been much broader than that.
Well, the civilians would go right across the age spectrum, of course. And you would have some older people who were killed. You also have children who are playing in the streets, you know, killed in traffic accidents or shot accidentally, really. So, yes, the spectrum is far wider in the case of civilians. But one of the interesting things is that there was a big gender difference between men and women among civilians killed. Of course, 5% of the fatalities overall in the Civil War were women, far lower, only 5%. But of course, most of those, the great bulk of those, were civilians. But one of the things we found was that younger women were more inclined to be targeted or were killed. Female children playing on the streets are just as likely as boys to be killed. Whereas women who were married were more likely in the household. So there seems to be less women killed in the marriageable age range upwards.
So they weren't collateral damage. Their daughters were collateral damage, but the mothers were in the home. They weren't.
Exactly, exactly. So there's quite a gender difference in the age profile.
One of the things that intrigued me, John, was that there were four British Army fatalities in the Civil War. Now, people wouldn't have been aware of the fact that there was still a British Army presence in Dublin in particular, and in some of the garrison towns around the country during the Civil War. What do we know about the four members of the British Army who died in the Civil War and how they died?
Well, all four of them were in Dublin. Dublin is the only place by the outbreak of the Civil War where there's a British Army garrison. There's also some military presence in the treaty ports, but that's it. They've left the rest of the 26 counties, what will become the Free State. And of those four, one of them is killed in action. So British forces played a small role in the fighting in Dublin at the start of the Civil War. He's killed on Talbot Street. Actually, he's a member of the Royal Air Force. There's a number of other soldiers wounded. Like, they were involved in a small number of operations with pro-treaty forces, you know, which is obviously kept quiet because it's in no one's interest. They're also targeted by the anti-treaty IRA in Dublin when they can, for the opposite reason, because it's good for propaganda. But there's one assassinated. He's sought out and killed. Actually, he's shot before the Civil War, but he dies afterwards in hospital, so he gets included in our figure. There's one who shoots himself by accident. And there's another one whose fate is unclear. So it's at first put down as an assassination, but then there's some suggestion he may have shot himself. It's not clear what happened to him, but that accounts for the four British soldiers killed.
One of your own areas of interest is the Civil War in Dublin. You've written a book on the subject. Dublin was the deadliest county in absolute terms during the conflict. Largest death toll, 260 violent deaths by your account. But if you dig down into those figures, it's rather more interesting. You've written that the figure somewhat overstates Dublin's role in the conflict.
Yeah, there's a couple of things there. So first of all, Dublin has the most victims, but Dublin also has the largest population. So we'd expect that. But secondly, quite a few of the people in our figures were wounded elsewhere and they just died in Dublin in hospital. So that knocks up Dublin's figure a bit. And thirdly, one thing that we might get onto is the extraordinary number, really, of accidents, particularly among the National Army and the pro-treaty forces. And what you find is they happen around garrisons, and Dublin is the biggest garrison. So that again inflates Dublin's total a bit. It makes it look like the combat is fiercer for longer than it was. That said, I mean, there is a common perception, which I tried to tackle in my book on the Civil War in Dublin, Miles, that the Civil War in Dublin was over after the first week and the fighting in the forecourts in O'Connell Street. And that's not the case. There's a significant anti-treaty guerrilla campaign afterwards, and it's quite troublesome for the pro-treaty authorities up until the winter of 1922, when it starts to fall away. But the other thing to say about Dublin, though, is Dublin, along with Kerry and one or two other places, is quite vicious. So it becomes very personal. There are a lot of personal vendettas pursued in Dublin. A lot of the anti-treatyites who are killed there are either executed formally, or they're informally executed. They're murdered, as they put it. And this lends a special tinge to the Civil War in Dublin, as it does in Kerry, that the anti-treatyites perceive themselves as victims of a murder campaign. And that does play into subsequent, I think, Dublin Republican culture.
And executions in Mountjoy, for example, are they would be included in the Dublin statistics?
Yep, executions as well, I should have mentioned. So Dublin has, if I remember correctly, 18 official executions, which is the highest number. So in Mountjoy, in Kilmainham, in Beggar's Bush Barracks, and in Kilkenny Barracks, one or two as well. So that would be another thing adding to Dublin's large figure.
Mm. Andy, the way the data is presented, placing where people died on your interactive map means inevitably that there are concentrations around Dublin and also around other urban centres, an exception, surprisingly, given its record in the War of Independence being Cork. But just tell me about how it is skewed, how the concentration is skewed around urban centres.
Well, the old garrison infrastructure is very important here, because barracks, the old barracks, are in these larger urban centres, Limerick, Tralee, Cork. These are kind of major garrison centres in the conflict zone, if you like. And of course, those garrison centres, there's a lot of accidents in the barracks. They also, these places have the hospitals, where a lot of people are wounded and wind up in hospitals, and a lot of these are also in barracks and so on. So you get this concentration in these centres. Also, of course, even in the conventional phase, there's very heavy fighting in Limerick, Cork, Tralee. They're very contested urban centres. So there's a whole series of reasons. And in addition to prisons, we've got to remember that many of the victims died in prisons, particularly the Republican victims, as the war went on. So there are a whole series of reasons, and the executions and these deaths in custody, all these factors build up in these urban locales. And this accounts for concentrations, secondary concentrations in places like Dundalk, in Kildare, in Wexford and Waterford, Galway, Athlone and so forth.
Now, the story here, the fatality story, is not dissimilar to the War of Independence, in the sense that a lot of casualties, a lot of fatalities in Dublin. Once you get outside of Dublin, the concentration is once again in Munster. When you look at Cork, when you look at Kerry, when you look at County Cork in particular, and the county, the entire county of Kerry. There's a key difference in the numbers of pro-treaty and anti-treaty combatants who die, though, isn't there?
Yeah, that's quite interesting. You'd imagine that Cork would be relatively anti-treaty in terms of death, but actually more people died on the pro-treaty side in Cork than in Kerry, where the opposite was the case. Far more Republicans died in Kerry. And Kerry, of course, was far more difficult to subdue. The IRA was more anti-treaty. There were more neutral IRA in Cork. And this is why the conflict, when you adjust for population, Kerry was by far the most violent county, twice as violent statistically than Cork. So this is a big difference in the campaign.
And the city of Cork itself, obviously, I mean, you talk about barracks and you talk about hospitals, and that would have impacted. But I'm assuming that the fact that the Republican forces did not really contest the city of Cork with the National Army means that the statistics, the fatalities for the city of Cork are not as high as you might have expected.
Yes, that's an interesting point, that the Republicans defended Dublin at very high cost. They defended Limerick and also Waterford. And so in the battles for all those cities, there's a lot of despoilation, artillery is used, a lot of people are shot. In Cork, while the Republicans certainly contested the landing at Passage in Rochestown and on the lead into Douglas, after they had lost that, they rapidly withdrew chaotically from the city, burning all the barracks. But to the great relief of the civilians, it meant the city was saved from the kind of despoilation witnessed in Limerick and Waterford and Dublin.
So all of this means when you adjust for population, Kerry is the most violent, or Kerry suffers the most fatalities of the Civil War. Is that correct?
That's correct. It's by far the most violent county. It's twice as violent as anywhere else. It's well ahead.
John, when it comes to the National Army, it's interesting that the majority of recruits have no previous military service, because there is a, I don't know if you'd call it a myth or if it's factual or not, that something like half of the National Army were British Army veterans, were Irish who had served in the First World War.
Yeah, so there's no doubt that there were a large number of British Army veterans, most of them Irish, but there are, interestingly, some British veterans we find in the casualties. Now, how many exactly there were, we can't determine by our casualty figures, because we have 600-odd National Army dead out of more than 55,000 were recruited. And, you know, the true total is higher because people are discharged in the Civil War, so well over 60,000 served. Now, that said, our figures show that among casualties, about 1 in 4, 25% had served in the IRA, in pro-treaty forces. About 17% had served in the British Army. So considerably more, significantly more, had served in the IRA than had served in the British Army.
So if it was a case that 50% were British Army veterans, they were better at avoiding getting killed, basically.
Well, possibly. I mean, another possibility is, so the National Army is significantly expanded in January 1923, when the Civil War is still going on and the Free State still has a big crisis in terms of ongoing and open sore, if you like, that's bankrupting the state. But most of the combat fatalities on the pro-treaty side have already happened by that point. So that could play into it as well. But as you say, I mean, the thing to note about the National Army, and I think even allowing for the discrepancy between casualties and total figures, is the considerable majority, well over 60%, had not served in anything before. They're young men, they have no experience, they're unemployed, a lot of them. One of the interesting things we found among casualties is the socioeconomic background of the National Army soldier is significantly lower than on the anti-treaty IRA side. And this is because, just like the British Army before it, the National Army recruited among the labouring classes, if you like, of town and country. So most of them had no experience. And this probably also explains the very large number of accidents on the pro-treaty side. So around 1 in 3 of the casualties, something like that, an appalling amount, is self-inflicted, either killed by friendly fire, killed in occasionally in disputes with their friends, but often killed by weapons accidents or vehicle accidents. And this probably is largely because of their inexperience.
How do you come by all of this information? And is it easier now than it would have been, say, 50 years ago or whatever, to compile these statistics?
Absolutely. I mean, this would not have been possible even 20 years ago due to really the internet and the digitization of so many sources. So the key one is the military service pensions collection, which accounts for many of the deaths, not all, but many of the deaths, combined with the digitization of the death certificates. Now, we also went to the General Registry's office, which is in County Roscommon, to check the physical death registries. But those two are the bedrock sources, and they weren't available in the past. The military service pension, in particular, that collection has a wealth of detail on circumstances of death, location of death, address, social class, previous service, all of the metrics that we were able to use for this project. Really, the military service pension collection is the key source.
Andy, what about Northern Ireland? Because the War of Independence, it's generally ignored, but the fact is that in the War of Independence, like, the city of Belfast suffered almost as many deaths as in Cork, which would have had very, very high casualties, relatively speaking, in the War of Independence. How does Northern Ireland, how do the six counties fare during this 11-month period of the Civil War?
Well, Northern Ireland is very quiet in this period. Of all our deaths, Northern Ireland in toto accounts for 59 of the deaths we have. So it's the quietest part of the country, in effect. And although Northern Ireland had been, you know, in terms of civilian killings, there were a very significant number of civilians were killed before the Civil War, more civilians that weren't actually killed in the Civil War, in Belfast alone. Civilian killings in Belfast subsided very quickly as the Civil War got going. And as the focus shifted southward, the north became quieter. So actually more people from the north were killed in the 26 counties who've origins in the north than were actually killed in the north itself. The centre of the conflict was in the 26 counties, and the conflict was about who had the right to govern the 26 counties. So the violence in the north was really different. It was about something else. It was largely civilians who were killed. And if you like, it was could be seen as another civil war, a different civil war.
And there were 10 bizarre British Army deaths among those 59. Tell me about those.
Yes, unfortunately for the British Army, there was a major boating accident, a ferry going across to Ballykinlar camp with 9 soldiers and a ferryman. It sunk in bad weather, and that accounts for all the British Army deaths in Northern Ireland.
Now, is this the end of the project, Andy, or do you think that once this data is released, once this project goes online, once members of the public start playing around with the maps, for example, that you're going to get more information?
It's a public engagement project, Miles, so we expect to get some feedback from the public, and I'm sure we'll probably find about some deaths that we haven't been able to pick up in all the sources we've looked at. We're open-minded on that front, and we'll add to the total if more are found. We need to focus also on the period before the Civil War and after. We had to restrict our time range because for financial reasons and for time reasons, we did the research for this within about 15 months. That was our limit. So that's why we decided to stick to those dates. And I think we only just about made it. So I think it was the right decision.
So you might be looking at the truce period and at the period then between the signing of the Anglo-Irish Treaty and the beginning of the Civil War and the aftermath of the Civil War, the post-dump arms period. You might look at those in the future.
That's a possibility, but I think Eunan O'Halpin is looking at the pre-Civil War period. He's looking at the Civil War as well and indeed the aftermath. So he's taking a longer view, if you like, than us, because he's looking at the entire revolution.
The dead of the Irish Revolution.
Exactly. Yeah, we are looking at the Civil War as much more specific.
Well, congratulations to both of you for putting this terrific project together. The data reveals some fascinating insights on the Irish Civil War dead and how the conflict played out in different parts of the country. The Irish Civil War Fatalities Project is, as I said, a UCC initiative in partnership with RTE. It's supported with funding from the Department of Tourism, Culture, Arts, Gaeltacht, Sport and Media as part of the Decade of Centenaries programme. And you can find regional studies of the data at rte.ie/history, where you'll also find a link to that searchable interactive map of every conflict-related death during the Civil War. My thanks to Andy Bielenberg and John Dorney for joining us this evening. That's all we've time for on this evening's programme. Details of all our items as well as podcasts are available on our website, rte.ie/historyshow. My thanks tonight to Mark McGrath on sound and our researcher Ian Kennelly. The History Show is a Pegasus production for RTE. For now, from me, Miles Dungan, and producer Lorcan Clancy, goodbye and thanks for listening.
Follow us on Twitter at RTE History Show.